What do I do?
Yeah.
Is this rolling now?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. Thought we'd just have general chit chat. As much as college teaches you certain things, there's a lot that I think dogs will teach you. That I have so many people say, oh, I want my dog to be like your dog. They don't see 24 hours of period, they see 10 seconds of a video. Whereas I try and open up and say, you know.
I think the danger of social media nowadays is that maybe it's time for long form content to come back a little bit to try and educate the masses that reactivity is not fixed in 60 seconds, it's not fixed in 5 minutes.
Your main priority should be the safety of the dog, not worrying about if your dog can do a backflip.
What do you do when an off-lead dog approaches your nervous or reactive dog? Do you have any sound advice for anyone?
What do I do, or what would I like to do?
Let's do both.
Comes walking through, gets in my face, puts his fists up. I never realised how many F-words could come out of a 70-year-old. It's unreal.
I think the most capable dog that I've ever seen and worked with is them dogs fucking send shivers down my spine.
Jumped and hung on to this kid's arm. I had to go
You're
over
joking.
And get this Frenchie off because the owners were just running around screaming. If a dog trainer turns around and says, yeah, we can fix any dog, red flag.
Yeah.
Red flag.
We have to remember we're dealing with biological organisms that aren't just machines that we can go and fix and they're all fixable. Mm-hmm. Like there's sometimes there's...
This week on Caffeine and Canines, I'm joined by my guest, Daniella Brandt, who rose to fame very quickly over TikTok for her honest, no-nonsense, behind-the-scenes dog training advice. It was a fantastic chat with Daniella, and we spoke about all things that are going right and wrong in the dog training industry in 2024. I hope you enjoy this episode as much as I did.
All my shit I show, I'm honest. If something fucks up, I will show it. Because people are so, unfortunately, naive that trainers' dogs are perfect.
Yeah. And we do fuck up. We do make mistakes,
yes,
right?
Yes, we do.
We posted a video not long ago of Alicia and I training Kevin that can't be trained. And people loved it for the reason that, you know, he was
it's honest.
Just...
honest. Yeah, definitely.
Oh, human.
Definitely.
Don't just post the perfect sport dog stuff all the time, right?
Yeah.
How long did it take you to get here today?
I drove up last night to my auntie's.
Oh, did you?
Doncaster.
Oh, right, okay.
So about 3 hours there and then an hour here this morning, so not too
Doncaster's
bad.
Doncaster's nice.
Yeah, they live in quite a nice area,
all right,
which
okay.
is good, so yeah, I'm quite chilled.
Where are you based?
Essex, Chelmsford.
Okay. Mm.
Shithole, basically.
What do you do?
What do I do?
Yeah.
Is this rolling now?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought we'd just have a general chit-chat. What do I do? So, on the weekends, well, yeah. Don't really want to tell everyone that. No, I'm dog trainer. Full-time dog trainer.
Okay.
Have done the last 3 years.
What did you do before that?
Before that. So, way before leaving school, I went to college for three years studying animal management, biology, canine okay. nutrition, and obviously body language with canines.
And at that point, what did you want to do?
I wanted to be a vet.
Okay.
I wanted to be a vet. Knew I wasn't smart enough at all to be a vet, so kind of done lots of work experience with the RSPCA, dog mm-hmm. groomers and a vets. Loved it, got to see the inside of a workplace in the animal industry, which opened my eyes up in what I felt comfortable doing, where I want to be in the future, kind of my goals. Then kind of veered off from college. I needed money for a car, etc. So started doing some care work on the side.
Yeah.
Absolutely loved it. Knew it wasn't where I wanted to be, but at the time it was giving me an income for what I needed. Kind of stuck in with care work after I left college, then started training to be a nurse for spinal cord injury and neurological diseases, which was amazing. Loved that. Done that for about 4 years, and just before COVID I was like, no, I need to get back into what I love doing. I then took on a dog that was my ex's at the time. He just was perfect. He was so cute.
What breed was he?
Doberman.
Okay.
Doberman, called Champ.
Hence the name Champion Dog Training?
Hence the name Champion Dog Training. He was the one that started it all up.
Nice.
Then obviously COVID hit. During COVID, we started doing some TikToks behind the scenes of teaching little bits and pieces.
With
and
Champ?
With Champ.
He was yeah. a big boy, right?
He was the size of a horse. We called him the pony. Mm. He was massive, absolutely massive. Biggest, softy, was just neutral around everything. He was the perfect dog to have to teach you new things. He had different things that were challenging, like every dog, but we worked around it. And
such
I showed such as attitude, bad attitude problem. Little things like a bit of drive, impulse control. I had to learn, you know, as much as college teaches you certain things, there's a lot that I think dogs will teach you that, you know, a bit of paper can't.
Yes.
And I've learned so much experience from being in person with maybe shadowing other trainers. Obviously working in the RSPCA opened up my mind to where I wanted to be, seeing how they run a charity as well as obviously how they look after the dogs.
Yeah,
which was obviously an eye-opener. Okay. So yeah, just kind of started doing bits on TikTok, social media. We started getting quite a big following, hit to about 50,000 followers, and I was like, oh my god, this is mad, in the space of a couple of weeks. And then I was like, do you know what, I loved it. I want to get into doing something with dogs. So obviously during COVID, saved as much money as possible, obviously everything was shut, so it's my opportunity to then put in money towards website. You know, people don't understand how much it is, your website, your van, your signing, your clothing. Yep. There's so much behind, even as little as getting a domain name, you know, there's so much more to it. So I just kind of started off from there. Then obviously from my personal account with my dog, I changed it obviously to my dog training page, because I thought, oh, there's no point then changing that and getting a separate page. Yep. People knew who we were, and it has just kicked off massively. And I think the main reason it's kicked off is because I'm so honest with everything that happens, and it's not always plain sailing, perfect picture. A lot of people think dogs with dog trainers are going to be perfect, they're going to be well behaved. So many people say, oh, I want my dog to be like your dog. They don't see, you know, 24 hours of period, they see 10 seconds of a video. Whereas I try and open up and say, you know, I've had problems with this, I've made mistakes, this is how I'm correcting my mistakes, or, you know, not every dog you're going to get is going to be what you expect, and people need to realise that.
I think the danger of social media nowadays is that because they're trying to condense our attention span by making things as short as possible when we're consuming information online, it forces us as canine professionals to almost dumb down the messages that we're trying to give.
Massively.
And I think that can be a little bit dangerous because we're not able to then draw the full picture that it perhaps takes to train a dog to the level that we're perhaps seeing online. And, you know, you're looking at videos that are getting shorter and shorter and shorter. Reels are now a minute 30 long, but I think they're going to end up getting shorter. And people are only watching 30 to 60 second videos. Meaning that the content that we're producing as dog trainers are getting seriously dumbed down to the point of it can be a little bit, where's the moral line where we say, we've taken this dog, we've done this, 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 and this, and now it looks like this, but actually there was so much involved in that. And I think maybe it's time for long form content to come back a little bit to try and educate the masses that it's things, reactivity is not fixed in 60 seconds, it's not fixed in 5 minutes.
So. Or a 1 hour session, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And I think a lot of, unfortunately, a lot of the research that I'm doing on what sort of content kicks off is quick tips, quick fixes, and things like that. But it doesn't exist in dog training, unfortunately, especially when you're dealing with aggression and reactivity, as you'll know. Let's talk about a day in the life of champion dog training nowadays. How does that look? What's the last week look like for you?
A nice lay until 10 o'clock, go for a Starbucks in a sunbed, nice. You know, go get my
double
eyelashes done.
Shot mocha.
Oh, and then
that.
The dogs. Can't
oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
That'd be nice, wouldn't it? do you know what? The day in the life of a dog trainer, well, my day in the life is very, very sort of chilled. You know, I don't do my boarding trains. I have so many one-to-ones. I probably do maximum five one-to-ones a day.
That's good.
I love it, but I would love to come away from the one-to-ones and do a little bit more sort of online, focus more on boarding trains where I get to have the dog on for a period of time so I can build a relationship with that dog, understand stuff that maybe the owners aren't seeing. Because a lot of the time, dogs will come and the owners will be like, oh, dog's doing this, doing that, and it's actually either they're the problem or they're not seeing behind the problem and they're just painting a picture thinking, I've seen this online, I'm going to say, you know, my dog's doing this because of what it says online. And unfortunately, you know, there's so much that you can do in an hour session. We're in a 2 hour session. And, you know, so many people will come to me and say, oh, I want my dog to be able to do this and this. And they have a time frame of when they want it to be done. When the reality, they haven't got the right dog, or they haven't got the right breed for it, or their dog's behaviour isn't right for what it is that they need doing in that time frame. So, yeah, I've come off kind of what we're doing in the life.
It's okay.
Of a dog trainer.
It's all good.
So Yeah, I normally have. I get up, take my boy for a bit of a play for about half an hour, do a bit
just
of training.
Just have one dog at the moment, right?
Just have one dog.
Who's that?
Loki, my little Loki.
He's a German Shepherd.
He's a black German Shepherd, biggest softie, perfect as my stooge dog. We're trying to do PSA. He's 8 months old, so we're just kind of going with the flow. I'm letting him literally be a puppy. So I'm doing bits of obedience, building foundations. My main priority with him is getting in that recall, making sure that we build engagement and a relationship, and just exposing him to anything and everything. You know, a lot of people get a dog and they're like, right, I want to get obedience with my dog. And they forget about maybe the threshold with the front door. Or, you know, a leave command. So when you're making something in the kitchen, if you drop something, your main priority should be the safety of the dog, not worrying about if your dog can do a backflip. So I'll get him out, do some training with him, then do my sessions. In between my sessions, get him out, and we'll just focus on play. In obviously my training ground is a public field, and we have a section cornered off, but it's brilliant because it's real life situations. You know, you've got the main road on the side, you've got it's an enclosed area. We can practice different manners through gates, and there's a little cafe, so we can go in the cafe, let the dogs neutralize around there.
That must come with its difficulties, though.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Let's talk about them.
Oh, last week I actually got threatened by a 17-year-old.
Tell that
17
story.
17-year-old.
17 or 70?
70, sorry.
70?
70.
With
70.
A stick?
No, with his fist.
Oh, okay.
Because I asked him to recall his dog. I had, and this is the problem, it's
Can
all
I
kind
guess
of,
what dog he had?
Please do.
A sort of sight hound?
No.
A Westie?
No.
A Terrier of some sort? Fuck, no. A Spaniel?
No.
Right, I give up.
Pointer.
Ooh, he should not have a pointer.
Do you know what? He's very old and he is really, really sweet. The pointer's old. And the man's old as well.
But he's not sweet.
But he's not sweet.
He threatened you with his fist.
Yeah, I never realised how many F words could come out of a 70-year-old. It's unreal.
Oh.
And I had basically the council. So I pay the council to use the area.
Yep.
And they suggest put some cones out, you know, so the public know not to come in that space. And, you know, this field is acres and acres, and I have the smallest area. And whenever I have a nervous dog, they say, get the cones out, put your orange high-vis on that says, please give us space, reactive dog.
Mm-hmm.
So I had this Great Dane come out. Honestly, okay. It had to be the biggest dog. Absolute biggest softie, but really, really nervous. Not aggressive, nothing, not bad behaviours, just really nervous. We had to build up his confidence.
What colour was the dog?
Great Dane.
Like blue grey or grey?
Like a bluey grey.
Yep.
Stunning.
See lots of very environmentally nervous blue Great Danes?
I mean.
I've seen lots.
Yeah.
I don't know why that is.
I haven't seen too many.
Genetic component.
In Essex, you get more of your Pomeranians and your Chihuahuas, nice. Your Great Danes. Yeah, lovely.
Lots of Frenchies?
Yes, lots of Frenchies. Lots of Frenchies.
Continue with your story. Sorry.
No, that's me. I always go off topic. So, have these cones out. Lady comes out. She's so nervous. And I think this is why the dog was so nervous. She was just trembling, bless her. So, came onto the field within 2 minutes. This guy's walking around towards the cones. And I said, oh, sorry. Do you mind just walking around the edge of the cones away? Because we've got a nervous dog out of the safety of you and your dog. Anyway, he came towards me and was like, oh, you need to F off out of here. You don't own this field. And I was like, well, of course I don't own this field, but I'm in this area. The council, you know, let me use this area. I've been here 3 years. You know I've been here. Every week he tries to push his boundaries and just, he's out to piss me off. Comes walking through, gets in my face, puts his fists up, you know, oh, you need to get out of here. You don't belong here, blah, blah, blah. I've been here my whole life, blah, blah. And it's like, doesn't matter. People in the village feel like, you know, they own the field.
Entitlement.
Oh my God, massively. Anyway, so people at the cafe and the council actually heard and came over. He didn't realise that they were there.
There was commotion.
And they had to pull him away from me because he was in my face pointing, putting his fist up, telling me to F off. Anyway, as I'm trying to get him to move away, my client has then, I've told her to move onto the field away because his dog is off lead wandering towards the dog. So I then quickly grab his dog. Oh, don't you dare. Wait and see what happens. You're going to get it this week, blah, blah, blah. So I'm just waiting for my new dog training sign to be vandalised that's on the field or something to happen.
Geriatrics rolling along.
Oh, God,
drive
yeah.
By.
Definitely. There's always stuff going on the public field. And, you know, it's a shame because in public areas nowadays, it's the whole kind of letting your dog off lead. Oh, it's all right, my dog's friendly. Or the amount of times you see a dog yapping and you're going past and it's, oh, it's all right, they won't do anything.
And that was one of the questions we had submitted. What And this same question gets asked every single time we do a Q&A, and it's, what do you do when an off-lead dog approaches your nervous or reactive dog? Do you have any sound advice for
anyone? What do I do, or what would I like to do?
Let's do both. let's go through what you do.
If I think I said what I'd like to do, I think no one would want me on a podcast again.
Okay.
Yeah, and maybe the RSPCA might be involved.
Okay. All right, okay. Let's do what do.
What definitely the safest way is always advocate for your dog. Or your main priority is advocating for your dog. Even if they are the most sociable, friendly dog. Like even my boy Loki, he is the most sociable dog that I've had. Even more sociable than Champ. But I will always advocate because I don't know the other dog. So I will always put my body in front. Obviously ask the owners, please can you recall their dog? If they don't, I will take a step away, but always having my body in front. And I will use my foot to shove the other dog away. Obviously not kick the dog. But if needs be, if I need to, you know, get the dog out of the way. If I'm training a dog that's nervous or even maybe aggressive, I need to protect my client's dog. And I will do anything in my power in order to make sure that that dog doesn't make contact to either my dog or my client's dog. You know, safety comes first. You have no idea what that dog is capable of. And the amount of times that people say, oh, my dog's friendly, and then afterwards they do something. It's, oh, they've never done that before. Bullshit.
Yeah.
Come on.
How many times have we heard that?
Yeah, well,
that's the first time he's done that.
Yeah, all the time. Do you know what? Even last year it was, a Frenchie was running around on the public field, just absolutely going nuts. And the owners were trying to recall it. All of a sudden it ran over to a kid playing, like basketball in the basketball area, jumped and hung on to this kid's arm. I had to go and get this Frenchie off because the owners were just running around screaming. And this is the thing, even if your dog is friendly, there is no excuse to then have them off lead. Clearly, this Frenchie wasn't friendly. But even when a dog does maybe attack either a person, a child, a dog, the amount of people that have no understanding on how to then deal with that situation correctly is scary. So scary.
Once even a friendly dog can have their prey drive triggered by things that they've never experienced before. So perhaps that Frenchie is rocking around, super friendly, sees basketball in that context, triggers prey drive, he then goes into bite and hold on or whatever it may be. And that may be a case where the dog has never truly done that before. Mm. Maybe he's shown similar behaviours in and around the home or wherever. There may be some history there. But I think sometimes we forget that even the friendly, sociable dog can... They're still an opportunistic predator, regardless if he's friendly, sociable, nervous, aggressive, whatever it may be, where they tend to use their mouth when they go into prey mode, right?
So yeah, massively.
Control is paramount, even when we have a sociable dog, because we don't know when 100%. That sociable dog could act out of... So, for example, Stark the other day, he is truly a sociable dog. He's a super friendly dog. You've met him there, all the rest of it. So we're walking through the park the other day. He's off lead. He's got his e-collar on. And some woman takes off her bobble hat.
Mm-hmm.
She starts swinging it like this.
Oh, yes.
You know, and it's just got the ball on the end. And he just, like, prey locks onto it, right? He's got super crazy prey drive. He's got crazy possession. And her hand was in it. Now, at that point, he was looking like he wanted to go and take that offer, right? So he's a super sociable dog, but again, something can go wrong with that dog. So I call him back into heel, we pass on by. Fortunately, nothing happens, but it just goes to show how easy things can go wrong with dogs, even when we don't have control over the dogs that have great temperaments.
Massively. Well, with the Frenchie, I would have understood that if, you know, stuff happens, even to us trainers, out of the blue, very unpredictable, and stuff that even if we have an e-collar on dog and we've put them safety measures in place, you know, stuff still can go wrong. It happens. But this Frenchie had also been known to the village and was always on the Facebook page, so we know that it wasn't just the one time. It's, do you know what? Some of the stuff that, you know, people come out with their dogs is scary. It does scare me what people believe, and you know, when they come for training sessions and they're like, oh, I've seen this online and whatever. And this thing, I was listening to your podcast with Emma not long ago, and where you were saying how unfortunately some of the most incredible trainers hardly have any following, but they're the ones that need to be known. And it is true. Like, I have a big following, but I am so new to this, and I'm always wanting to work with other trainers, wanting to build my knowledge, because I'm nowhere near where I want to be at all. And I've got so much that I need to learn and grow. But there's some trainers out there who have been doing this years and years and years who don't get recognised or appreciated the way they should, massively. It's a shame.
Unfortunately, that's the dangers of social media.
It is.
Someone that is well followed on social media, as even as a dog trainer, typically they're good at making content,
mm-hmm.
not necessarily good at training dogs.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's the harsh reality of it. And that's why you're seeing all the Yorkshire Canine Academy content getting a little bit wacky nowadays, because we're just playing the game, unfortunately. Yeah. And away from that, we also need to demonstrate that we're capable of training dogs. But
you're doing very good, though.
Very good. I think I reached 6 million this morning.
No way.
In the last 30 days, yeah.
That's mad. Really good.
Yeah, so
really, really good.
You just got to, unfortunately, play on the general population and what kind of triggers them. So play the game a little bit. But my thought process is, if we can gain as wide an audience as possible, we can then start educating the masses on what. Right? So we're going to start talking more about the e-collar and the benefits of the e-collar. Yep. Now, we're at a point now I get to tell that to 80,000 people because I posted some stupid shit.
I was going to say, you got to post some silly stuff or even like real life on what's happening in your lifestyle with either dog training or even a bit of personal in order to then sort of get that engagement and then start actually giving out the facts, you know. But a lot of the time then when facts come in place, people then switch off.
Yeah.
Oh, not interested in that. And that's such a shame. But then they'll go and watch the news or false information and go, oh, okay, because, you know, BBC or whoever painted this picture, it's got to be true.
Yeah.
You know, the same as this whole XL bully ban. They've painted this picture of a breeder dog when it's nothing to do with a dog. Okay, it's been bred in a certain way. Some breeders have, you know, tried getting the dog to maybe be a bit more aggressive, or, you know, you've got people that are taking them on and using them incorrectly, etc. But unfortunately, it's social media that are straight away said, they're a dangerous dog. That it's the breed. It's the, you know, I have so many clients that have XL bullies and they are the soppiest dogs going. They're amazing. And it is scary.
Whatever gets clicks, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And typically when people's emotion is triggered.
Yes. It
gets clicked.
Yeah, I mean, but as well, in the wrong hands. I say in the wrong hands, at the end of the day, you know, they have a strong grip.
Yeah,
they have. Their mouths are huge.
They're not so much a dangerous dog, but they're a very capable dog.
100%.
Very capable. 100%. They're much more capable than the cockapoo.
Yes.
So I've been bit by plenty of Dachshunds. Mm-hmm. In fact, I've been bit by 10 times more Dachshunds than I have XL bullies. But I'd rather take those 10 bites than I would the one bite of the XL bully that potentially isn't going to come off my arm.
Yeah.
And put me in hospital for a good few weeks, where the Dachshund, I'm going to get cleaned up and I'm going to carry on training that day.
Yeah.
The XL bully, that's not happening.
No.
So I think we've got to consider the dog's capability when we're talking about certain 100%. Breeds.
Oh. But I also think then the news need to inform people on what to do in certain situations if they have a breed that is capable of doing a lot of damage.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, that's not spoken about.
Yeah. Dog that is also readily available to the public and popular with the general public. We are familiar with certain breeds of dog and certain mixed breeds of dog that are extremely capable in the sport world, but fortunately for the most part those dogs are kept by working dog handlers and sport. And if them dogs got into the general public, then we'd be in big bother, you know, your bull herders and things like that. So,
but I also feel like now they're banning the XL bully, people will go on to the next breed of dog and it's just going to keep following.
It'll be the Corso, and I don't know. Yeah. The
Rottweiler,
I think the most capable dog that I've ever seen and worked with is the Bauble.
Mm.
Them dogs fucking send shivers down my spine. What sort of one to one work do you do? What sort of cases do you work with?
Do you know what a variety? My most popular is probably lead walking.
Okay.
As much as I love it, I get it. You know when you do something so many times?
Yep.
Like, it's the same thing over and over again.
How do I get my dog to stop pulling on the lead?
Oh, you just grab the lead and swing it around.
Yeah,
you
know, helicopter
you've
method.
You see Matilda. You just
Trunchable.
Do you know, there's so many different ways. Obviously, first of all, I like to assess a dog, the relationship between the handler and the dog. You know, if you have no relationship, trying to build engagement in a loose lead walking, your dog's not going to be interested. You know, I always say, right, okay, what do you do on a day-to-day basis with your dog, you know? And the amount of times that people say, oh, just take them out for half an hour walk, that's it. You don't go out, you don't engage with your dog, you don't play with your dog, you don't teach them that you're the most exciting thing out and about, you know? They've never been hand-fed, they've never had a ball or a tug game out of the house. It's all inside the house. So they've learned when there's no distractions, they are the main priority, that the height of the rule. they're the high reward. As soon as they're outside the house, everything else is more interesting because they're given that lead and go and do whatever the hell they want to do. Yeah. And then all of a sudden they want to change that and get their dog to be walking by your side. He'll focus, you know, they see these videos online. Oh, my dog to do that. But they've not built from scratch, you know, engagement with your dog, playing with your dog, hand feeding with your dog.
I think then people are a little bit too quick to jump to tools.
Yes, yeah.
And that becomes problematic. Why?
What, with other trainers jumping to tools or the public wanting to do
tools? Joe Bloggs goes and looks at a prong collar and goes, I've heard this will stop my dog pulling, and they put it on the dog.
What's scary?
Without addressing anything else.
100%. What's scary is I've had a lot of people that come to me where either other trainers have put a prong collar on a dog, mm-hmm. and the prong collar isn't even a Herm Springer, it's just your shitty one from Amazon. You know, there's no play, the prongs are naff. I've had one where I've gone and shown the client, look, this is how strong, and then it snapped.
Yeah.
And it's dangerous. Well, people have come and they've said, you know, I've just bought it from online, I've seen other people. I had someone yesterday message me and say, oh, you know, I've got this breed of dog, I want to use a prong collar, where can I get one from? And unfortunately a lot of people would then just be like, oh, you can get it from here or there, or they'll go off and do their own stuff. And I always say, you need assessment first. The amount of dogs that do not need prong collars or e-collars is crazy. But unfortunately a lot of people straight away go to a tool, that's how you fix a dog's behavior. It's not. A tool is there to aid in that training, definitely, depending on what it is, the behavior, the age, the size of the dog, definitely. But it's all about your techniques with that training, or how you build a relationship with that dog, how you engage with that dog. That's what's going to make an effect. That's what's going to change your behavior, or get the desired behavior that you're asking for.
For me, the client that comes along that has utilized a prong collar or a slip lead or an e-collar, and they've tried to do a DIY jobby.
Mm-hmm. Even a harness. Any tool. Yeah, definitely.
And inadvertently, because of they've not address the underlying and the motivation of the dog, and kind of the trying to increase the internal motivation of the dog or intrinsic motivation of the dog, and then slap a tool on the dog to try to address the issues. Mm-hmm. What happens is this tool gets desensitized, and more often than not, the application of that tool or the application of the pressure with that tool becomes an activation into the behavior they're trying to get rid of.
Yes. Yeah.
So they come along, they have the prong collar. The dog is reacting. They're trying to correct the dog.
Mm-hmm.
The dog then gets really pissed off because they've got this non-contextual correction that's happening whilst they're being exposed to the trigger, mm-hmm. which is adding kind of fuel to the fire. So we've made our problem worse. And then what's more concerning is that then becomes the image of balanced dog training.
Yes.
And becomes a valid argument of how tools can go wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And I am not under the impression by any means, and I don't try and tell people that things can't go wrong with tools.
Mm-hmm.
But if you apply a tool without work around that tool and you just stick it into a reaction, you're probably going to make the reactivity worse. I'm not denying that.
Yeah, 100%. A lot of people don't understand that a prong collar is an agitation collar.
Yes.
You know, a lot of people think, oh, we're going to get prong collar, it's going to stop reactivity. Like, a lot of the times, people have come to me with these tools and they've gone, I've got this on my dog, don't know how to use it. Well, why, you know, you wouldn't be given a paintbrush if you don't know how to paint. Mm. You know, you wouldn't be, you know, given a paintbrush and go, right, okay, go do this massive decorating job. You just wouldn't do it. And it's scary the amount of people that are going out and watching stuff online and taking stuff off the internet and going, that's all right, I'll just use that. Well, that's right, they've used it, I'll use it. And well, they think, oh, then this is why I've come away a little bit from social media, because, you know, people will see a video and they'll go, oh, my dog does that behavior, I'm going to try that because that's how it's going to resolve it.
Mm.
And it doesn't. Every dog is different. Even if you lined up the same breed, 10 different dogs, same breed, even from the same litter, they will all need different techniques, different stuff to resolve different behaviours. Well, even if it was the same behaviour, they all might need different ways to then get that desired behaviour that you're actually wanting from them. And it is scary. It is scary. But that's the whole thing about social media
nowadays. Yeah, yeah. We're being forced to create quick fix content. Yeah. And unfortunately, that's not. And again, this is why I like doing these podcasts, so I can discuss these sort of problems with trainers, mm-hmm. like yourself, and hopefully start directing people towards these elongated answers. Mm-hmm. So they turn around and think, I've looked at a prong, I've looked at the e-collar, blah, 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 blah. Okay, perhaps I need more work. And the answer's always going to be the same, isn't it? Go and employ a dog trainer to help you out.
Mm-hmm.
Don't try and fix the car yourself. You're going to fucking hurt yourself, or you're going to wreck your car. Go to a mechanic and then And if you don't like the opinion of that mechanic, go to another one.
Yeah.
Or if it's something doesn't seem right, go to another one. There's loads. Yeah. There's so many out there.
Yeah.
Any cases you don't like working on? Is there any sort of cases you would refer to another dog trainer?
Oh, yeah. I've referred a couple of dogs to other dog trainers.
Okay.
It definitely, if there's something, especially when I was just starting up and there was something that I didn't quite understand, well, I was unsure of. I had, once I had this German Shepherd, young puppy, about 6 months old. And you know when you just have a gut feeling, something isn't right. And the dog came, it was reacting to anything and everything. It was in switching on its handler, you know, 6 month old puppy. And this dog was just a screw loose.
Yep.
And I was like, something isn't right. And something is telling me that something is wrong. You know, it's a 6 month old pup. And now I spoke to other trainers and they're like, oh, just whack on the prong collar. I was like, no, this isn't at all. This is something that needs to be seen. You know, something's not right. Something was bugging me. So I said to her, look, go get this dog health tested. Go see what's going on because something is not right for that behaviour. And other trainers were like, no, do this. And then one trainer said, you know, go make sure she does a health check. She did, came back, brain tumour. And that's the thing. You always have to check with other trainers. There's, you know, so many people say, oh, I don't want to talk to other trainers. I don't want to. You know, it's a bit embarrassing, you know, always speak up. If you're not sure of something, if, you know, you're not comfortable with a behaviour and you know someone else or another trainer would be better suited because they have more understanding and experience with the breed, there's nothing wrong with referring them to someone else. There was another case, I think it was a Rottweiler I had, and I just couldn't understand why it was doing a behaviour. Same again, just redirecting towards handler, redirecting to anyone and everything. Didn't want to play, didn't want to do anything.
Yep.
Referred it to another trainer, and I think now they're doing really, really good. I haven't really heard too much. I know they're doing good, but haven't really gone dig deep in it. And sometimes you're not always going to be able to fix a dog. You know, this whole myth of dog trainers, if they can't fix a dog, don't go to them. If a dog trainer turns around and says, yeah, we can fix any dog, red flag.
Yeah.
Red flag. It's not going to happen. What was you going to say? Sorry, I just interrupted.
No, it's all good. We have to remember we're dealing with biological organisms that aren't just machines that we can go and fix and they're all fixable. Mm-hmm. Like there's genetic components involved with dog's behavior that means that you're going to either manage that for the rest of the dog's life, perhaps look at some sort of meds for that dog, and perhaps even when they're extreme and there's danger involved, then behavioral euthanasia. Not every dog is meant to be fixed.
Nope.
And I think trying to sometimes fix dogs that there's a strong genetic component or the history of reinforcement is super strong or whatever it may be, trying to fix that and like hammering a square peg into a round hole can create massive problems that were greater than the problems you ever started with in the first place.
I think I'm a good example as well with that after last year with my Dutch Shepherd, Zakara. And I wanted to show people online that it's not always rainbows. You know, you don't always get a dog and it turned out to be the dog that you want it to be. You know, I got her very, very quickly after my dog passed and she was sweet. We hated each other. There was no relationship there. We couldn't build anything together. She was just completely wrong for what I wanted to go into. Mm-hmm. And that's fine. I accepted that. But rather than going then in the next 15 years of having her and completely clashing, not building, and also as well, she was a representation of my business with her strong genetics, with everything that was going on, I knew it wasn't going to work. So the best thing for her was to then find her somewhere where she would benefit, where her needs would be met and she'd be fulfilled. And I found that place. And yet she's doing brilliant, still can't get much out of her. And I feel like I've made the best decision. It's taught me a lesson. I hold my hands up at maybe in certain times I've made mistakes in raising her with different stuff that I'd done. Like a lot of stuff, like she was chasing cars and working with so many pet dogs, I was like, oh, that's a problem that is. Well, she's a herding dog. And that's where I've learned so much in that past year with the working breeds. And I don't regret my decision in getting her because she has taught me so much. I regret not maybe looking more into her as a dog, but I won't ever regret having her. I think a lot of people will say, oh, do you think it's a mistake? I don't think it was a mistake.
Decent learning curve?
A massive decent learning curve, massively. But also I wouldn't have Loki if it wasn't for her. Mm. Things happen for a reason. And, you know, when Champ passed away, he, you know, put a massive hole in my heart. I was stuck as a dog trainer. Loads of dog trainers will have numerous of different dogs. Mm-hmm. You know, they'll have their studio dog, then they'll have their working dog.
Mm-hmm.
And with Champ, I was so close to getting a working dog as he was my studio dog.
Yeah.
And he suddenly passed out of the blue and I was really stuck. And it went a month of him passing and I was like, I'm a trainer, I have no dog. And rather than me thinking of my own needs and going, I need time, I was thinking of a social media prospect and what people would have thought. And gone, oh, dog trainer, no dog, you know.
Must get a Dutchie, must get a Malinois.
Must get, you know, these high breeds.
Fire-breathing fucking Malinois, or I'm not a dog trainer.
Exactly, exactly. No, you know, it just messed up. It just didn't work out. And I held my hands up and I said, you know, it messed up. And so many dog trainers privately messaged me and said, you are not the only one. And so many dog trainers, I went and met so many people so they could see Zakara. And they're all nah, like, you're not going to get much out of her. She's not the right dog for what you want.
The amount of people out there that have dogs that is perhaps a little bit out of their capability for whatever reason, that are getting bit, they're getting redirected on, they're getting fucking chomped up by their own dog. It'd be much better if people just put their hands up and say, do you know what, this isn't a good fit. Not that I'm not a good enough dog trainer for this dog. Sometimes it just ain't a good fit. Move it along. Let it go thrive elsewhere, whatever it may be. Might get some stick for this, but I feel like male dogs have a better bond with female handlers anyway. That's, you think about some of the dogs in the UK, Axel and April and Jen and Red and Emma and her boys, Mel and Vanko. Them, the handling partners out there, female handler, male dog. Don't know, maybe there's something in it. Don't know.
Yeah. Who knows?
Bitches don't get along, right?
Bitches do not get along, and she had a strong attitude. I tell you that now.
And you're from Essex, so.
Well, that's it all, you know, icing on the cake, really, isn't it?
What next then?
Oh, I think you need to apply a heater.
Sorry?
I think you need a heater.
I can see you shaking.
I'm
doing okay.
I'm trying to talk. I'm trying not to stutter. My teeth are like...
When Emma was here, you could literally just see her breath. And I was like, fuck. So you soft southerners.
Yeah.
It's hard, north, cold.
Yeah. Normally
we won't be too much longer.
No. It's good.
What next? Yes.
What's the plan for you in the future? Have you got anything lined up the next coming weeks? Have you got anything, any goals?
Funny you might ask.
Any more greyhounds?
No more greyhounds. Yeah, we had the radio up earlier. We got us to employ us to train their greyhound. That was fun, right?
I think it was good. She was so sweet.
She was a cute dog. I like a greyhound.
I liked her.
We should just get old rescue greyhounds, then we'd all be fine.
She needs to be
stuck
by fire.
We'd be out of a job, though.
Yes, exactly.
Maybe not. What's next? We're about to release an online academy.
Love that.
But it's going to be like an educational hub. We do want it to be like Netflix for dog training, but cover more than putting a certain tool on a dog and then getting them to behave. So it's got a couple of different modules.
Love that.
It's got how to build motivation in your dog, how to play with your dog, how to genetically fulfill your dog. We have a module on damage mitigation, which is, what are you applying in that dog's life that is inadvertently fueling your dog's unwanted behavior? So their lifestyle, how are you managing them around the house? There's a module on health there. There's a module that why you should go and get your dog checked out for injuries. We've got plenty of guests coming on to do different modules. So we've got the canine dietitian coming on to go and give a module on, or a lecture on, how your dog's diet could be influencing their behavior. Jo Rosie has said she's going to do a module for us.
Love
so,
Jo Rosie.
Yeah, she really knows her stuff. So I'm trying to get a little bit of a collective of different dog trainers having their input. I've got a couple of even force-free dog trainers on there that are talking about genetic fulfillment, and we're going to cover tools, and we're going to look at e-collars as well. So I'm hoping that it's a all-round one-stop shop that you can go on there, learn more about how to just not just fix your dog's problems, but also give your dog the best life that they can possibly can. Because
that's brilliant.
For me, getting our dog to behave and putting discipline over a dog is only a fair trade-off if you're giving the dog the best life that you can possibly afford to give your dog. So I'm happy teaching my dogs, you have to come when you're called, you have to walk nice on a lead, so long as the trade-off, the compromise we have is I'm going to give you a fucking brilliant life if you do those two things for me.
Yeah.
If you settle down in the pub, I'm going to make sure before we go to the pub, you've got an hour's hike under your belt, right? That's just the trade-off for me. Whereas I think some people are training their dogs for them too much and trying to squash their dog into a human lifestyle, where I think the discipline and training element of a dog should be to enable us to give our dogs a life closer to the genetically predisposed life that they desire, not just to make our lives as humans easier to have that Disney dog.
Yeah.
So my big beef with people that are hating on something like the e-collar, if the e-collar is a tool that can enable that dog to have a more biologically fulfilling life, I think your reasoning to use the e-collar is justified.
Yeah.
If it's just to make sure that your dog is super obedient robot, I think you need to question your ethics in that instance, right? So
yes, and your skill set.
Exactly. So
yeah.
Back to the academy. I'm hoping it's something we can put out there that is just there to educate people on, one, the application of obedience and discipline and all the rest of it, your traditional dog training stuff, but also how else can we improve our dogs' lives? Because I feel like the quality of our dog's life also, well, does definitely have a massive influence on all the unwanted behaviours we see in dogs, right?
Yeah.
And I feel like sometimes that's a bit neglected. And you can't talk about that in a 90-second video.
No.
You can't.
No.
So, plenty going on there. You've promised me a tutorial, so I'm going to hold you to that. You going to do it with your dog?
I'll do it with my dog.
What's next for you?
What's next for me?
Yes.
We have loads of stuff planned. Loads of stuff planned that I haven't even announced yet. So
announce one now. Go on.
Oh, I can't.
Fucking go on.
I can't. Oh. The next thing that we have is in a few weeks' time, we've got Champion Dog Show. This is something that I first done a couple of years ago with Champ. It was more my clients were like, oh, I want to take my dog to a dog show, but we're always, you know, penalised for our dogs having reactivity. Well, we're banned because, you know, our dogs don't behave this way or they don't look this certain way. So I wanted to do something where my clients could feel comfortable, also a great fun day out. And with myself anyway, from a personal perspective, I love doing stuff for charity. I'm a proper like charity geek. So I thought, oh, do you know, it'd be an opportunity to raise money for charity. So I done that a couple of years ago, first time. The day of the dog show, the day before the Queen died.
Selfish.
I mean,
bitch.
We love you, Queen, but she messed everything up. So I had to change all of that. Because obviously a lot of stalls were like the night before, no, like out of respect to the Queen, we're not coming and stuff, which totally understood. So changed it for a couple of weeks after. It actually worked out better because then more stalls could attend. So it worked out really, really good. And it was such a fun day. So I was like, you know what, I want to do it again. So booked it all last year. And then obviously Champ died. Thanks, Champ. And just everything just went tits up. The whole year was just messy with like my business. I fell back on my business because I was so, you know, I took a good month off when I lost Champ because it was so unexpected. And he was, you know, you always have that one dog in your life that is your absolute rock and roll, and he was it. So everything kind of got backwards. So this year we've put it back on again. It's happening on the 1st of April. We have so much coming, different dog stalls. We have like a mini fun dog show happening with like prizes, rosettes to be won. We have little like have a go activities for the dogs. So like flyball, we've got agility. And then we've got like kids entertainment. So really, really good. And then we've got different stuff throughout the year that I want to do with the business.
You're not going to do a crazy PSA demo or anything like that?
No, definitely not. Definitely not with Loki.
Yeah, okay.
No. I can get you to come down and do one with Stark.
Yeah, sure.
That'd be good.
Yeah. I'm sure you've got more capable friends closer, but I'm more than happy to come down and
it's a long way.
How long are we hoping? 4.5 hours?
Four and a bit hours.
Yeah, no, I'm there.
Yeah, be good.
Any online stuff for you?
I would love to start going online and doing lots of, you know, bits and pieces online. But at the minute, I've got a lot of stuff that I need to focus on before.
It takes up so much resource. It's crazy. Mm-hmm. You're just like, oh yeah, just film everything I do and put it on. Nah, it needs editing, cutting down, making like user friendly, then uploading and like just even file size of like 4K quality videos is just fucking insane.
So. And it might look like I have my shit together.
I'm acting like now I do any of that. As, these guys are behind us like, what the fuck do you know, mate? Why are you talking about that? Like, you're not fucking slaving over a laptop 8 hours a day.
You do fucking... not take credit for my work.
Okay, I felt like a wanker saying that. Okay, sorry. I put my hand up. I don't do any of that. I just talk shit in front of the camera. Okay. Nice. Okay, a couple of Q&A's.
Yes, do some Q&A's. Oh, God.
Get them up.
Definitely think you need to invest in a heater. Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Are you cold? Are you...
I'm freezing.
You can jack it up if you want. Okay.
Oh, God. I'm
we didn't
really
get any about our teeth, which I'm disappointed about.
My teeth are real. I've just had the
fuck off for your teeth. Fucking real.
Everyone says, swear my life. Everyone says, oh, you got veneers. I haven't got veneers.
You're joking.
Got a bit of bonding on the top, but then
that's all I've got as well. So
then my see, we haven't got turkey teeth. Nope. Everyone thinks we have like proper turkey teeth.
They're good, aren't they?
Although I am from Essex, so I don't blame people. You know, the blonde hair, so the straight teeth. What haven't I had?
No, you have. You what have you had done to your teeth?
I had bonding. Like bonding just on like the two side bits, just to make them straight.
Just at the bottom
and then just whitened at the top ones, nothing on the bottom.
No veneers.
Yeah.
You're getting a tattoo lasered.
Yeah.
Tattoo fucking painful, isn't it?
Yeah, really painful. It's almost gone though, it's getting there.
Right, let's move on very quickly. Our questions we have.
Oh. I'm not looking forward to this.
Okay, this is an interesting one. Why?
Oh, it's not, I just don't
It's
like
about dogs, it's not about.
Okay.
Is it okay that my Springer's recall is immaculate when I've got a stick, but is 70% without? I'm going to say no, it's not okay.
No, no, because then you're always... What if you go out, your dog's always... You're always needing to rely on a stick. What if you don't have a stick? Put it on something like a ball where you can transfer it and take it out with you all the time. Put your dog on a long line until your dog knows that recall without the use of a stick.
And I think using sticks for a reward is dangerous anyway, because they can splinter, dogs can choke on them and all the rest of it. So a ball,
not good.
Indirect reinforcement so your dog doesn't know that you have that reinforcer on you, and ditch the stick.
Yep.
Okay, you got 70% recall without, that means you got 70% recall, does it? Okay, what is the best way to train a dog to settle in a restaurant or pub when food is about?
I think this is really, really important. Especially, even if you're not in a restaurant, even if you're at home and you're sitting there eating dinner. My favourite thing to teach a dog to settle is I will put the placemat by the door and I'll put them on the collar and lead, and I'll put the lead through the door and shut the door so they can't come off that placemat.
I learned so much doing these podcasts.
When they're a puppy, so if I'm teaching my dog to settle, rather than straight away, I mean, as a puppy, it's great to take them out because they're normally quite sleepy.
Yeah.
So they'll just settle anyway. But if you have like a high drive dog or whatever and they can't settle, I will put the bed or like a placemat by the door. I'll put the
front door.
No, not the fucking front door. Just a lounge door.
All right, okay.
And I will put the collar and lead.
I thought you meant like through the letterbox. Go on.
Don't choke my dogs and I slam the door. So I pop the lead. I have it tight enough so they can't come off, but loose enough so it's relaxed.
Yeah.
So anytime they go to go off, they're restricted from coming off, but I can still walk around. Over time, they start learning to just settle. You know, there's that restrictor. A lot of people will say, oh, just go on your bed, but there's nothing restricting them from coming off.
Gotcha.
So they're just every time, right, go back on your bed, which, yeah, you can practice,
yeah,
but I want something there. So if I walk away, my dog's like, you got to settle, you know?
Yeah. So like a back tie, yeah?
Yeah, a bit of a back tie. So that's what I like doing to teach my dogs to settle.
Yep.
Obviously, crate massively helps. You introduce crate training, teaches your dogs to settle. But I would just expose them as much as possible to different surroundings. Pens?
Yeah.
Don't really like a pen.
Okay.
Just because I feel like any time, you know, a puppy goes near or whatever, sometimes you can just knock it over. I don't trust them.
Yeah, okay. Fair enough.
Don't trust them. I think, obviously, when they're like puppy, you know... eight weeks younger, then definitely.
Yeah, but your 8 month old puppy's probably going to get out of a pen, right?
Yeah, he is. Yeah, probably.
Big boy. Teaching a settle, start at home, use a back tie.
Always start home.
Like you said, I feel a lot of people when they're teaching the place work or settle work, firstly, they don't use a lead and they always ask the same question, mm-hmm. What do I do when my dog gets off?
Yeah.
Chances are if the dog does get off and you are using a lead, by the time they've got off, they've done something reinforcing to validate them getting off.
Yep.
By the time you then take them back, you're in this to and fro. So,
and you're just going around in circles.
Yeah, definitely, back tie is definitely a good idea. I like it.
I also think as well, a lot of people want to rush and take their dogs to a pub or anything like that. Trying to desensitize in such a high arousal place is just not going to happen. Take them somewhere where there's less distractions and over time build that up. You're going to get a higher chance. You're going to get then the results that you want.
Nice. Good advice. That's real worthy right there. Or TikTok over here. We've done that one. How can you teach house manners to a spoilt dog? Fairly generic question.
You're the problem.
Okay, yeah.
If a dog's spoiled, that's not the dog's fault. You're the one that's spoiling them. So you need to apply boundaries to yourself.
You need a good fucking long, hard look in the mirror, firstly.
You need a weapon.
Maybe I'll bleep that out. Bleep his name out.
Yeah, I'll bleep that out. If you've got a spoiled dog and you want to teach house manners, I don't think it's necessarily the dog that you need to look at. I think you need to look at yourself and go, right, okay, what do I need to change in order to make sure that my dog's going to start having house manners? Definitely get booked in with a trainer and do a home visit so they can help you in certain areas. Crate training will be a massive thing. I'm always going on about crate training, to build boundaries, to teach an off switch, to help your dog have that safe place to settle. Mm-hmm. The amount of times that I go to places and they're like, oh, I want to teach my dog, you know, how to settle, I want house manners, where they're jumping off and all this stuff, but there's no restrictions, there's nothing in place to say you can't do this behaviour. They're just letting run free in the house, doing whatever they want to do.
Yeah, crazy. People don't, people aren't aware of it for the most part, right?
No.
People treat untrained dogs like trained dogs, and I think that's problematic.
Yeah.
My adult dogs, and now Stark, are spoiled. They have pretty much full liberty at all times in the house, but that's because we've set a precedent early on, and then it's been given to them. But people get a puppy, try and give it as much freedom as soon as possible, mm-hmm. and treat it like their trained 12-year-old Labrador that was old and decrepit for the last 4 years of their life that didn't want to get anything wrong.
Yeah, massively.
And then wonder why their dog isn't training themselves. Mm-hmm. But why would they have any reason to change their behaviour when they get what they want when they want, right?
Massively. I think definitely you can spoil a dog. But once then boundaries and foundations have been put in place first, so then as well, if your dog is doing something, you can switch them off. It's not a case of your dog's just going to carry on doing their behaviour.
Yeah.
But you're actually allowing it because you're reinforcing the behaviour because you're allowing it all the time, massively. Yep.
Okay, what else we got? We have got... this is a tricky one, but we'll go for it. Rescued a dog around 2 years old, cannot stop his play biting behaviour. Advice, please.
It's hard without seeing the dog and the handler interact. Is it a case of you're reinforcing that behaviour? Are you the problem? Are you not, you know, putting them on a lead and stopping them? Are you just playing with them and then going, oh, it's too rough now. Stop. You know, it makes it very difficult without seeing it. I would definitely apply boundaries. I would keep, almost go back to like puppy basics, put the dog on a collar and lead so you can restrict that. But I'd also make sure you're giving that dog an outlet as well. If you're not giving them much play or an outlet, that dog's going to find alternatives like that nibbling, like that biting to say, actually, you're not giving me what I need, so I'm just going to do it on you. And if you're not then applying different boundaries with that dog, they're just going to carry on reinforcing that behaviour because you're allowing them to get, you know, that out of their system.
People get really flaily as well, right, when their dog starts mouthing at them, which just promotes that kind of that dog into prey. So they're like, hey, stop it, making high-pitched noises and all the rest of it. But chances are your dog's biting you out of play or prey.
Yeah.
And you're doing all the things that you should do when you're playing with your dog.
Yeah.
But when you want your dog to stop biting you, then you shouldn't be doing that. Hey, high-pitched noises and squealing and all the rest of it. So
I think a lot of people forget that dogs play with their mouths.
Yeah.
You know, they use a lot of stuff through mouthing. And if you're not... given them an alternative or given them an advantage by giving them something else to get that outlet with, they are going to go for you. They are going to go for your hands. You know, a lot of the questions I get is, oh, my puppy's biting, how do I stop this? Well, teething is going to come into place with a puppy. They're going to mouth. It's a normal, natural instinct for them to do. Yeah. Rather than, you know, stopping it and getting the dog even more frustrated from having that outlet, give them something that they can do. Give them maybe like a frozen carrot or give them a tug toy. Give them a little bit of a play with it. And then, right, okay, are you putting in boundaries or are you making sure that your dog's having enough sleep? A lot of the problems with that is that people don't understand dogs need to, or puppies need sleep between 18 and 20 hours a day.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're either overtired or they're not getting enough sleep.
And there's some science to say an adult dog needs to sleep that much as well. People want to address problems reactively.
Yes.
They want to fix the problem as the problem's happening or after the problem has happened, right? But if you want a problem to not surface and not be a problem, then you must deal with it proactively.
Yes.
You must address what is happening in that dog's life that are potentially causing the behavior. And something that I have a big gripe with is people believe that because we are dog trainers that use tools, we don't have that mindset. Mm-hmm. So we don't care about the dog's genetic fulfillment. We don't care about the dog's sleeping routine. Yeah. We don't consider the dog's diet when we're looking at behavioral issues. But any good dog trainer, balanced or not, should look at all of those. And just because they're using tools doesn't mean that we just go straight mm-hmm. to the tool. And that's something I really want to convey to people that are listening out there, that okay, because I use a prong collar or because I use an e-collar does not mean I don't consider mm-hmm. all the underlying first before addressing mm-hmm. the behavior or contributing to addressing that behavior with the tool, right? So
I think that's one of the biggest comments you get when someone says, oh, you're using a tool because you can't train a dog. And it's like, you have no clue what the tools are designed for, why they use or how they use or how you condition a dog to it. You know, straight away you think that we're using a tool because we don't know how to train dogs.
Or you're just masking the problem and all this.
Massively. You can't handle that dog.
You said earlier, it's an aid. It's an aid to the bigger picture, right? It's just, you're painting a picture, but you need the palette, you need the paintbrush, you need the water, you need the easel, and whatever it may be.
The right tools to get the job done.
But they're all considerations. Okay, we went slightly off.
I always go off topic.
So we've got a question here. I'm apprehensive to use the e-collar.
Mm-hmm.
How does the e-collar feel? Do you have any analogies that you might use with clients to help them understand what the e-collar feels like?
Why are you guys giggling?
I'm not.
Like you said earlier, it's just like a TENS machine.
Anything else?
No.
Okay.
Do you know what? I think everyone has an opinion on a tool. So when they feel it, I think they've already got an opinion on the tool before they've actually felt it and gone, oh, okay. Yeah. You know, a couple of weeks ago, I tried it on my partner. Not, you know, didn't just whack it on his neck and be like, here you go, babe, try this.
Yeah.
But, you know, he was saying when the whole e-collar ban was coming in place, he was like, do you know what? I've never even felt an e-collar. And I was like, do you know what? Come here, Finn. He was like, oh, I'm a bit worried. And, you know, he's in the army, so he's a tough lad.
Tough lad.
He's a big boy. You can edit that out.
Keep it in.
He's you know, nothing startles him. And he was really worried. He was like, oh, is it going to hurt? And I done it. And he was like, go on, do it. I was like, I've done it. That's, you know, that's a low-level 10 sim.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, that, you know, whack it up a bit. I put it on 20. Is that it?
What did you get
30.
To?
30. Can't even remember, like 45, 50?
Nice. Kirky took a 72 to the neck the other day. Ooh. That's fucking high.
Oh, spicy.
But that wasn't his max. We were just fucking around for
I think, do you know what? If you're wanting to get into e-collar training, you have to see a professional who understands, you know, the tool, who knows how to use it.
When I'm doing classes or one-to-ones with e-collar, I do all the demos on the handler first. I train them as if I'm training the dog, and then I get them to do the same for me, so everyone has an understanding. I know they're going to do it correctly. Then we'll do another round each, and then we start thinking about doing it with the dog. So,
massive.
Last question, easy one. Weight gainers, my Springer is very lean. Currently feeding Carni Love True Fresh.
Mm-hmm. She wants to
put weight on the dog.
Mm. diet can be a massive impact on your dog's health. You know, it can change your dog's behavior, etc. It's hard without seeing the dog, because it would be better to understand the age of the dog, what you do daily with the dog. Has your dog got any health issues? Is that why maybe they're not gaining any weight? You know, as much as you've put the brand of food that you use, I don't know how much you're feeding a day. Yeah. You may be feeding less than what the dog should be on, especially if you're working that dog.
Yeah.
They need maybe a little bit higher nutrition in order to fill that little bit of a hole if they're being over exercised.
What do you feed your dogs?
Raw. Love raw dog food.
Yeah. I used to feed mine raw, and I went back on kibble because I'm being lazy. But did a podcast with the canine dietitian, and it was really, really interesting. She told me some things that I did not know. Really interesting.
Inform me on some stuff. Give me a couple of little tips that you learnt.
So sometimes we can put a dog off food by letting them go too long without food, because it creates bile in their stomach, which creates like an acidy taste in their mouth. So when they go to then sniff the food, they associate it with that like unpleasant sensation in and around their mouth, and they can actually make food somewhat aversive.
Yeah.
Which I found quite interesting.
Yeah. It can also cause, obviously, like us, a lot of cramping, and that can put dogs off massively, massively. Yeah. Do you ever like starve your dogs?
No, so we always, so we don't fast the dog. We always offer the dog 4 opportunities to eat a day. So if a dog is like no food motivation, what we typically don't do is say, okay, we're going to go a day without food, which for the most part isn't problematic for most dogs. However, we don't want to create a dog that will only take food and be motivated whilst in that state of hunger. We want to take a dog that has been offered food, then perhaps miss the opportunity because they did not want the food. And then next time they're offered the food, they say, it was my control that I missed out on that meal, so I'm going to operantly take this food now. Perhaps the dog, can they go into that far of a cognitive process? I'm not sure, but there's an ethical thing there as well, right?
Yeah.
We don't want to starve dogs out to get them food motivated, because chances are they're just going to satiate themselves, become full, and then lose motivation again. So I don't typically recommend that. They're all the interesting ones. There's a couple of ones that we've already answered throughout this podcast, so we're going to wrap it up there. Thank you very much for coming.
Have
you done a podcast before?
Do you know what? I don't think I've done a podcast. I've done lots of different lives, but not done like over, you know, the phone.
Where can people contact you?
You can contact me via my website. Obviously, I have a contact us page, championdogtraining.co.uk. Or either by email, championdogtraininguk@gmail.com.
What are your socials?
My socials, championdogtraininguk.
Super easy to remember.
Our personals or?
No. Oh, well, God. Said you've got a partner, so.
Nathan, close your ears.
Fucking.
You can't put that on there. Poor Nathan's going to get
Nathan.
So much.
He's like fucking. Is he gone?
Oh, bless you. He's going to listen to this.
Fucking wanker.
Just easy. Just champion dog trainer on TikTok, Facebook, and Instagram.
Got a question from Nathan here. What's your Snapchat?
I do have Snapchat, but I haven't used it for years.
Yeah, same. Same.
Scary.
Fine.
But right, we'll wrap it up. Thank you very much for having me.
You're very welcome. That was great. Thanks a lot. Bye.